There was a young woman in Russia who loved a young man who she met often in the woods at night. She didn't tell her mother of these rendezvous, but she loved them nonetheless. The young man promised her his hand in marriage and told her that he was leaving for Moscow to tell his father of his new bride so that he might come back and take her with him. The young woman ran to her mother and excitedly told her the news, but the old woman warned her daughter not to trust a promise from a man who left. And eventually, the young woman was in sorrow because the man never returned. The young man who had promised marriage to the girl, for his part, was found again someday. He was found dead by the banks of the river. He was covered in water and had been dragged back to the surface, though clearly he had fallen in. He was the victim of Russia's first Rusalka, the lifeless women who dwell at the bottom of the rivers and lakes, who are scorned in life and who are therefore cursed to take the souls of others in their death.
Under the sea.
This is the emotional disjunct.
Life is much better down where it's wet. I feel like it was a heavy cold open. It was so good. But then you just got a Little Mermaid.
Little Mermaid.
Yeah, exactly. Just some Little Mermaid.
Are we going right now?
I think we're going.
Oh, wow.
I think we're going.
Hey.
Fantastic story.
Under the sea.
Under the sea. So how do you pronounce it? Rusalka?
Rusalka.
Rusalka.
R-U-S-A-L-K-A.
So that is, we're going to talk about a few theories of mermaids. For sure they're real, and we know where to find them.
First things first.
They're show real. Our hand. Yeah, first. So in terms of percentages, mermaids, 100%. Not that they did exist. They do exist, and we know their exact location. You'll have to stick around to the end of the video to find that out.
Wait a minute.
It's a big promise.
We do?
I'm sticking around. No, we don't. But I've got a theory.
But what we want to do for at least, you know, the opening portion of this is just say there's a lot of conceptions of mermaids. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a universal myth, legend for a very long time. And you've given us one. And it was great for a cold open to just grab the listeners. But the one that you provided for us is dark.
Very.
But to be fair, they're all pretty dark.
They're all dark.
Yeah, mermaids. And that's why I was obviously, I thought it was going to be funny. You guys, I think, were terrified.
I didn't catch on to it until you started saying the words.
I was so confused. I've never in my life been more confused.
Life is much better down where Joel it's wet. So
that's the lie that they tell the Rusalkas.
Exactly. Well, that's why I was saying. No, but seriously, a lot of little girls today are being indoctrinated and there's a fascination with mermaids, and it's always in this positive light. Mermaids are great.
Right. We need to go back to Hans Christian Andersen.
We need to go back to if you're a mermaid, you're in hell. You don't want to be like these girls.
Yeah, you're in hell of sorts now. And then you'll either cease to exist, an annihilation kind of thing, or you will be in hell later. But let's get some theories. So one is the Rusalka.
Yeah, the Rusalka. It's like a woman scorned who dies for some reason. The subtext is that she kills herself in the river. And since she died in such scorn.
Or she was drowned in the river.
Yeah, or she was drowned in the river by the sorcerer. And she's now forced to take the lives of others by the same means. So she hunts men.
And usually men.
Usually men, yes.
Right. So that one is a revenge. So that's the Russian myth.
Yep.
And that's a revenge story that these are women who were once human. They lost their lives unfairly, or they made a deal with the devil, some sorcerer, a coven. Or in some conceptions, I'm pretty sure I'm familiar with at least one story where, and it's also Russian, it's the Rusalka, where some men took these women and robbed them and drowned them.
Yeah.
In the river. And then later on, those same men come back and are seduced. They see these women who are bathing naked in the nude in the river and who are beautiful. Oh, come, you know, and they come and then they drown.
Listen, like a brother, where art thou? If you ever come across a nude, I'm just going to say person, but especially lady,
she's beckoning you
into the woods, the ocean. Go off of your boat if she's singing to you. What you want to do is say, "That's the demon's house," and you just stay home.
Be gone.
Turn around. You say, "I've made a covenant with my eyes not to be enticed by the demon mermaid ladies."
Amen.
I've seen too many stories about this. This is a common danger. Kids, you need to know this.
Kids, you need to know.
This is like a DARE program for being enticed by sirens.
Don't do drugs.
Hey, run away.
Do not mess with mermaids.
That's right. And don't stop at home. Just run straight to church and repent.
Go to church. Just
You need to get saved.
Something you know, you got stuff to repent.
Yeah, that's probably. Right. That's right.
All right. So Rusalka, revenge. That's what that is. Yeah. It's a revenge story, and they're plaguing men.
Well, and these are common mythological tropes. Many various mythologies will have some kind of wrong that's done, a life that's wrongly taken, and so then that spirit of that person, becomes a haunting entity and ultimately seeks for justice. I think the human desire for the source of some of these mythological foundations really come back to our desire for justice and our understanding that justice isn't perfect in this life. And so rather than believing the gospel that God is going to accomplish perfect eternal justice, we mythologize justice in the form of the vengeful spirit. Mm. So you see this, I mean, this permeates mythology and on many levels.
The Chinese, the hungry ghost, that's one.
And then the mealing in, I think, Scandinavian of the child that was born out of wedlock and the mother killed the child and now the child comes
black
back.
Black-eyed kids.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, isn't
that? That's related to the black-eyed
kids.
Even
changelings and some.
Right. You
know. Yeah, very, very common thread that runs through a lot of these.
So Brian, real quick, tell us about, because let's just be honest, you're useless in this episode. You told us by your own admission. I'm virtually useless. You're utterly useless.
I said,
but you're going to contribute humor.
Yeah, I'm going to contribute. I'm going to make fun of you guys for saying you believe in mermaids.
That's good. Uh-huh. Wait a minute.
If I feel like it, if I choose it convenient to also believe in mermaids at some point, it will no longer be cringe. Right. It will actually be really cool.
But one thing that I was going to say you can contribute is, like the Disney movie based off of
the Hans Christian Andersen original.
Yes. So give us a little bit of his conception of what were mermaids.
His conception is much more dark. That
they're all dark.
It's wrong for her to. It's a tale about escaping the boundaries of your given domain.
Right.
Which is again, I mean,
it's
going to
come
up
in many things that we talk about.
When you desire wrongly to go outside of your creational bounds and you attempt to do that, only death results. And so at the end of the tale, the mermaid lady that wants to become the man for the sailor who's, you know, handsome and whatnot, she ends up in constant pain and, you know, knives, the feeling of the earth under her feet are like knives.
Right.
It's nothing like the animated.
No.
There are no singing lobsters
right
to be found anywhere. And at the end, she just dies and becomes the foam on a wave, essentially.
Right, and so part of his conception was there's a reason. It's not just for the sake of love. She sees this dude and, you know, and is dissatisfied with the mermen down below.
The mermen aren't hunky enough.
Potential suitors.
In Bikini Bottom.
It's part of it is in his conception. Mermaids live. He said, much greater, longer lifespans than humans. So humans, put them at 80 years, 70, 80 years. But mermaids would live to be 300. But the difference is that when the human dies, that they have an eternal soul will transcend. But the mermaid is soulless, which is why Ariel is redheaded, right? Gingers have no souls.
Gingers don't have souls,
right? And also Nephilim, right?
Redheaded six-fingered giant.
So Brian has red hair.
Just for the record, there's a reason that old joke of gingers have no souls, that actually comes from somewhere.
God gives little hints.
I'm not saying it's true.
Like colorful frog, don't eat it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Redheaded person.
Watch out.
Don't trust them.
Don't trust them. No, okay.
Indeed. Here's my issue with the Rusalka type stuff. I'm uncomfortable having a category in my head of a person that is lingering after death.
Right.
And who's, I'm more comfortable with some sort of sentient being that's soulless than I am with a person whose soul is lingering.
Yeah, exactly.
And to go back to the Little Mermaid, the actual, Little Mermaid 1.0 before Disney, made it happy and, all those. What I was going to say is only a 300-year lifespan. He actually says they become the green glowing, sea foam once they die. Their soul doesn't go anywhere. They just meld into the ocean. Yeah. But also the reason why she wanted to fall in love is it wasn't because she couldn't find an underwater suitor, but the only hope. So she actually has, this mermaid has a discourse with one of the sirens. They're like basically, sirens of the sky, wind, with wings. And she has a discourse with one of them. And they say, well, the only way that you would have any hope of regaining a soul is that you would have to make a soul being, a human being that has a soul, fall in love with you, and you could share in his. And so that's part of the motivation. Ugh. Is not just finding a partner for erotic, you know, romantic reasons.
Hence the siren. But
trying to become souled and therefore immortal. And so that's one conception. So you have the Rusalka, you have that Little Mermaid, you know, the famous one, but the dark version, the original version. There's also Enoch's.
Yes. You want to tell us about that one? I know that's your big one.
Joel's
this
big.
This is like Joel's like, I am Enoch.
Joel flew us down here just so that we could get to this point.
To share this theory of mermaids.
Could share a theory about, of mermaids.
Yeah. So, well, mermaids bring all the boys to the yard. And then they drown them.
And that's right. Because they're trying to steal their
actually,
soul.
It's a very like Lilith motif.
It is.
Or succubus motif.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to steal the soul, the life, the blood, the child of the thing.
Whatever it is, the force.
Vampiric.
Yeah. Vitality.
Yeah. It's very vampiric, actually.
It is.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Enoch's.
So Enoch's conception, and I like this one because it makes a little bit more sense of like where, you know, what's the origin? Where did they come from? So Enoch says that, you know, that it's not just that the watchers, these fallen angels that see the daughters of men, that they are lovely and come into them, take them as wives, that it's not, it's not like Genghis Kong style. It's not that these fallen watchers, that they, forcibly take human women as a harem of wives, but that these, daughters of Cain, right? So there's this godly line of Seth. So naturally we'd assume that the women who actually, would actually join in marriage with these watchers who are in rebellion against God would be worldly and carnal and rebellious women, daughters of Cain, but that they're not forced into the marriage covenant, but they actually do so willingly. They're actually attracted because they're carnal, sinful human women, and therefore attracted to rebellious, angelic, fallen creatures. And so they, and these, for the record, these watchers are not, they don't look like ogres. Think Thor.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So these are, but think Thor in two instances. One, attractive, glorious, strong, majestic, magical, supernatural. But also think Thor in the sense of like us. Right. Like I think of even the Psalms, that ultimately is a messianic prophecy speaking of the Christ and the author to the Hebrews, who of course is the Apostle Paul. He makes that clear. But in the Psalms, you made man just a little lower than the angels, right? Who is man that you should be mindful of him, or the Son of Man that you should care for him? Angels, at least some angels, there's a debate to be had about cherubim and seraphim and four living creatures and the 24 elders, but at least some of the angels, messengers that actually have earthly visitations, look a lot like us. Every description that we have of them, they look a lot like us. Higher beings, attractive beings like the men of Sodom, want these angels for nefarious, crude purposes. So they're attractive, more attractive than your average human, but they're not so majestic and supernatural that people don't think that they're human at all.
Well, it's part of why it's so easy for the Greek gods to get human women in all of the Greek myths.
Exactly.
Is they're very attractive.
And they're close. So exactly. So they
look like Timothy Dalton.
They look like men, not monsters, but men. They're not men, but they look like men, and they're close enough to men in terms of genetic relation that they actually could procreate. That these fallen watchers, and I know that's a whole can of worms. We talked about it last night. You know, that's maybe we'll make that a bonus episode. In fact, I think we will. I think, you know, just if you become a Patreon supporter, you can have access to some of the bonus material. And part of that is in-depth analysis and some theory and history of Hollow Earth theory. But we'll probably throw an angel episode.
We'll argue about angels.
Yeah.
We'll argue about angels, how physical, how spiritual. Yeah,
we'll just throw down.
Yeah.
We're actually going to move the chairs.
How virile are they?
It's just going to be.
It'll literally just be a wrestling match where we'll each dress up in a costume that demonstrates our favorite conception of what an angel might be.
Dibs on Smeagol.
Yeah. Brian's going to dress in a costume covered with eyes and six wings.
Personally, if I had to choose.
Jump off the top of the bookshelf.
Yeah, just completely.
From the ladder over the top.
To be clear, it's like me and Ben versus you. Because you're kind of, you're tall.
Okay. That's what me and Ben, we actually
we're
measure.
About the same height.
That's true. So I need a tall guy.
It's really that you're
like,
just short.
Like 8-year-old boys, we stood back to back to see.
Dude, you're so short.
By comparison.
Me, only I know why you're short, King.
Thank you.
So okay, so
I appreciate
but
that.
the point is this: angels being close can procreate. The women are volitional, And that this is a they're already of the line of Cain and rebelled against God in one degree. But now this is just full send. Like there's no coming back. We hate God. And they know, they're not tricked. They know that these are rebellious watchers, fallen angels, and they willingly, they're not taken captive, but willingly join in marriage, and that the offspring of this unholy union is the Nephilim. And then from the Nephilim descend giants. But it's not just the watchers have sinned. They're then locked in gloomy dungeons. That's their punishment. The Nephilim are the product of this sin, and they're wicked and sinister and monsters of sort. But then no one ever talks about what happens to the women.
Well, except Enoch.
Except Enoch. And Enoch says that the women's curse is that they became sirens. And he uses the word sirens. They become mermaids and are banished to the sea. And in biblical terms, the sea is often, heaven won't have a sea. Because the sea often is referred to as a place of the dead. That the sea is, it's a barren place. It's a place of lost souls. And that these sirens have gone.
Are you a beef jerky enthusiast? Well, then stop it. Seriously, stop it. Because Biltong is superior to beef jerky in every single way. It's a traditional South African meat snack, but it's free from all the preservatives, the sugar, and the soy. It's like the Wagyu of jerky. Now, here's the exciting news from Farmer Bill's Provisions. Farmer Bill's is introducing their brand new product line for your enjoyment. We've got right here the traditional beef slab. You've also got, if you want a smaller portion, you've got the slices. It's just as much meat, but you're able to eat it in increments. This is for yourself as an individual, or maybe for you and your family, your kids. Then you've got the meat sticks. This is what, if you're a working man, you want a snack to keep in your pocket to eat, you know, before lunch or something like that, grab one of their beef sticks and take it on the go. Lastly, you got to check out the tallow. For all the moms out there, my wife, she swears by this. Many women in our church say that it's a fantastic product. So don't waste any more time. Go to farmerbillsprovisions.com today to support a Christian-owned small business. And while you're at it, go ahead and subscribe so that you can save on multiple options and ensure that you and your family will never be without your favorites. And the last thing is this. If you want to get 15% off your purchase, all you got to do is type in the promo code RIGHTRESPONSE. Again, the promo code, type in RIGHTRESPONSE. So visit farmerbillsprovisions.com today and get 15% off your purchase.
The word soap makes Christian soap. What makes our soap Christian? First and foremost, it is because our soap is good soap, made exclusively from natural and organic ingredients. In addition to making a good product, we also promote a good message. Our bottles of soap aren't wrapped in heretical garbage. They're wrapped in sound doctrine and the infallible truth of Scripture. Lastly, we have a good mission. At The Word Soap, 10% of all our profits go directly to the godly men and women at Abolitionist Rising who are fighting to protect the lives of unborn children. Our product is pure, our message is true, and our mission is pleasing to Christ. So join us. Visit thewordsoap.com today. Again, that's thewordsoap.com. Everyone needs soap, so wash yourself in the Word.
So Joel, in this conception, if I'm not mistaken, there's an element where the theory is that in some way, giving way to these beings is a seeding of their soul. So they become soulless.
Exactly.
In the sense that some portion of their soul has been consumed or taken from them. There's that. Am I mistaken?
Yes. And in this theory, the mermaids themselves, as physical creatures becoming mermaids, may have died off, may no longer exist. But think like Michael Heiser, Nephilim kind of thing. So like the demons, right? That Jesus, you know, when he cast out legion, it goes into the pigs, you know, or a demon when it's displaced, goes through arid, waterless places until it can find a host. In Michael Heiser's conception, his scheme, you know, which I think is absolutely plausible, these are the disembodied, these are not fallen angels or rebellious right. angels, but these are the disembodied Nephilim spirit that are, they can either go above
the unclean or below. Spirit. Yeah.
And so this would be the wives now, that were the mothers of the Nephilim and the wives of the fallen angels, that they forfeited their soul by taking part in this union, and they became mermaids, and then maybe the mermaids eventually died off, but likewise, not going above, not going below, no more soul. And so they too, like the Nephilim, are disembodied spirits, but in the water kingdom.
That is interesting, because if you, I guess no one talks about the ladies. You know?
They don't really talk about,
because every other party gets a really clear punishment.
Yeah, the angels, the watchers do.
Except the women.
The Nephilim do. The giants do.
That's interesting. So do you, like, do you buy that?
No.
Okay. I was going to say.
I think it's possible. So Hollow Earth, man, you guys heard that episode.
Oh, yeah.
I was like on board with
Richard. You're like a solid 40% crazy. The crazy idea.
Yeah, because we weren't even talking about the later conceptions of that we think are absolutely, you know, but I specifically said, so I have no one to blame but myself, but I said the King Kong Godzilla version of Hollow Earth, and I put it at a 40%.
With creatures and ecosystems. And
I stand by it.
Large reptiles and dragons and sea monsters, and they've got the primary water down there, so of course they live a long time.
So what's the percent on Enoch's view of the mermaids?
So this one, I'm going to put it between 10 to 20%.
Okay, because what I like is the idea of the women being punished.
Me too. Punish the women. I know it sounds bad, but honestly, we do live in a world that is the divine feminine, where women are always a victim, whether it's abortion, whatever it is, they're always
and often victim. Our own actions rise up and become a punishment for us.
Yeah.
Where those who hate wisdom love death. And so there's divine punishment in addition, obviously, in terms of God's wrath, but God also pours out his wrath in them receiving in their bodies the due penalty of their sin.
Right.
For example, in Romans. So it's like, what's crazy about it is the whole idea, but what's at least in terms of the patterns interesting is that would align the natural consequence of you giving way to this. Hey, you went and did drugs.
Right.
And then you went crazy and you stabbed your boyfriend 57 times, you know,
right. Yeah.
It just happened in the news.
Right.
100 times.
200 times. Yep. Was it 100?
It was 100.
And only got community
she
service.
She got 1 hour of community service.
For each stab.
She should have become a siren.
Can you imagine that guy? Like, if he was a Christian, he's in the great cloud of witnesses right now. Like, are you serious?
Is he
judge of California?
Did he make it?
Oh, I don't know.
Did
he make it?
Like 100 stabs?
What was he stabbing with? A toothpick?
Stranger things have happened,
Or was this
Joel?
A knife?
I don't know.
That guy's gone.
He's told me about this story.
It originated from Brian.
This guy has nothing to do with mermaids.
Another thing that I like about that.
Okay, and then I was going to say, we got to get your theory.
Yeah. So another thing that I do like about Enoch's thing that I am probably around a 10%er on.
Okay, so I'm not that far off.
I mean,
I said 10 to 20.
I'll say 10 or less. It depends on the day.
Okay. 10 or less, and zero is less than 10.
And zero is an option.
5 is less than 10.
But what I like about it in terms of reconciling mythology is that it actually gives an origin story for Lilith-type creatures, succubus-type creatures, sirens, mermaids, and not just sirens.
Right.
It could be all of these, you know, the witch, bird lady, all of those things, like the demonic feminine.
Right. As well as the siren myths that we do see in history.
Yes.
You know, that there are these creatures in the water who will entice you in.
Lure them.
This transcends cultures. This goes oceanic, lakes, rivers. This is anywhere you find bodies of water.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of mythology really does attend. So similar to some of the other topics that we've dealt with on Haunted Cosmos, with ghost stories and with dragon stories and with giants, you do have to do something with the question of where did these stories come from?
They come
so universally.
And we don't ever adhere to the answer of, well, it's a Jungian motif in the human psyche that just came out of the ether.
It's just in the
it came from something.
The bandus mundi that circles the earth. It's the band of thought. And we just latch on. These thoughts come in and out of our head. Right. And you know,
that's nonsense.
Yeah, that's nonsense.
So my idea, one idea for mermaids that I think is plausible according to me,
which authoritative.
Right.
We're excited.
So I made it up. Host of the Haunted Cosmos podcast.
Seriously, though.
We're excited.
We're excited on this. I made it up.
Yeah, this is 100% made up.
But it is compelling to me. So we know that there's different angelic types. You know, you have seraphim, the cherubim. And they all serve different roles. Mm-hmm. So thrones, powers, dominions, principalities. I think that
they're 100% physical.
Well, okay. Definitely not.
Says, they're all male.
Go says, ahead. Yeah, these are just only common Joel in the history okay, of Christmas.
This is disclaimer. Common knowledge that we all agree on. Okay. Go ahead.
No, it's not.
No, it's not, to be clear.
But I think that it's not outside the realm of possibility, given texts like Daniel 10 and Daniel 12, where you have the Prince of Persia resisting the angel sent to Daniel.
For weeks.
And, right, for 21 days.
A long time.
And he needed the archangel Michael to help him, which is awesome, by the way. Mm-hmm. But so you have a prince that is an angelic prince right. that's put in authority over a dominion of men, right. Persia.
A principality.
Right. Mm-hmm. And presumably it's a fallen principality, which is this would be Calvin's view, that God put a fallen principality over a fallen people, Persia.
To give them over I'm saying to the region sin. Is the principality, the prince, fallen prince over reason,
right.
fallen principality, region.
But I was saying that what if like a dominion or a principality, sure, could be not bound to groups of people, but to geographies.
Yes.
To certain geographies. I don't think this is outside the realm of possibility because we know that the Acts.
We're excited, emphatic truth.
Well, yeah. So we know that the Acts in the unseen realm affect the seen realm. We know that the angels blowing trumpets in heaven make earthquakes on the earth.
That's right.
This is a one-to-one thing. I don't understand the mechanics, and I'm not going to pretend to explain the mechanics, but we know that that does happen. So you could have, in my idea, you could have angelic-type entities, whether fallen or not, over geographic realms, and they govern the natural processes of those realms to some degree to carry out God's decree.
Very medieval.
Right. It's very medieval, but I love it. And if you want to call it a fairy, you can do that. It's fine, but it's not technically a fairy. And so in this way, not only does this answer the possibility of mermaids, because you can have some of these things falling into sin, and so therefore creating particularly, you know, stormy seas or rugged waters or a rugged wilderness or a desert, or a forest that's very dark, that's easy to get lost in, like the Japanese suicide forest, mm-hmm. clearly overseen by a fallen geographic angel, obviously. but then this also allows you to answer the positive side, where you have river daughters in folklore, in folkloric myths, and the old man Willow, who's very good and kind to people, and who actually gives life to people. It allows you to have a Narnian conception of nymphs that's not completely negative, but that actually maybe some of the nymphs do dance with Christ, with Aslan, and they help bring about his dominion on the earth. And so if some of these then fall, they take on, because they're now made lesser, they take on a more physical form,
right?
But they're still over that area, and God still uses them. They're still bound to bring about his decree, even if they think that they're going against it and sowing discord into the music, but they're really not. But they would seek to destroy. So instead of a body of water giving life, it's a body of water that takes. And ultimately, these mermaids are physical representations of something that's supposed to give life, taking it.
Right.
And we know that that's not supposed to be. And so that's my idea.
No, that's great. I like that conception because, again, I do think that from that you can derive an origin story because that's one of the, like, where did they come from? And so if you have watchers and they're falling and then, you know, in and being fallen, each one is appointed within the sovereignty of God, you know, appointed over a particular principality, thinking of the prince is the watcher, the principality being the region. But that some of these regions, they're geographic. They're not just cities where people dwell, but geographic, a mountain, a river, a ocean, a desert.
And this is why every religion has a holy mountain.
Right.
Because there's a being on the mountain.
And then in take, exactly. But then in falling and being assigned to a particular region, that they took on certain attributes in the physical of that region, then, okay, like, so where that gets me is, okay, Poseidon, Dagon, right? So the Philistines, one of their chief gods was Dagon, the fish god. What if Dagon is a watcher, right? If fallen, but over the region of the water. And then in terms of supernatural power, just for the record, remember in the book of Job, just in the first couple of chapters, Satan, right? So there's this divine council, the sons of God who are angels, but then Satan is among them. And God says, you know, from where have you come? From roaming to and fro over the earth. And then, you know, God says, have you considered my servant Job? And there's this wager of sorts, all underneath the sovereign banner of God. So Satan is not autonomously free. Mm-hmm. He must do only that which falls within God's sovereign plan. But he does have power. And God says in the first phase, later on, he allows Satan to afflict Job's body with sores. But before that, the boundaries that God sets is you cannot touch his flesh. And during that, one of the things that Satan does, besides just stirring up, you know, the evil intentions of the Chaldeans to rob Job and these things, is that Satan actually goes and has power over the wind and causes a great wind to blow so that the house of Job's children capsizes and collapses upon them and kills them. When Jesus calms the storm, who's to say that there wasn't some kind of demonic power causing the storm in the first place, trying to capsize the boat where the Son of God is? But then what makes Jesus so significant is, like the disciples say, who is this who has power over the wind and waves? Well, we know from Job that Satan had power over the wind. So it's not that
he's like, the prince of the power of the air.
Right. So it's not that God is not superior in the sense that he has exclusive, he's the only one that has, but he has the greater power. So even dominating Moses, dominating each of the different gods, real gods, not just smoke and mirror, but real gods in Egypt, they're able, the magicians can cast down their staffs. They too actually turn into snakes. But what's superior about Yahweh is that Moses, his serpent, swallows up the others. And so Jesus calming the wind and waves, what if it's not that he has power over the wind and waves and that Satan didn't, but that Satan is actually trying to capsize, he's stirring up a storm on the water, the Sea of Galilee, but Jesus, when he gives his command, it's the superior command. And then even Jesus walking on the waters, turbulent waters, again, in the midst of a rough sea, it's exercising and symbolizing Christ's dominion, that he walks on the realm of the dead, that he tramples upon it.
There's no reason as well, I mean, to go back to my classic Haunted Cosmos conclusion, that these also just can't be a demonic phenomena.
Right.
Right.
You know, where you have demons who are engaged in trickery for all those purposes, and that you have demonic powers that are involved in stirring up all of the wind and the waves and involved in, because we know that demonic powers, when they were oppressing or possessing a person, could affect their physical health as well. It could give them, like, basically epileptic seizures, throwing them into a fire, like all of these different assaults on the physical. There's some mechanism that we don't understand by which the spiritual enemy can afflict the physical and bring power to bear in the physical realm. So I actually think that there's another possibility here, without positing a new type of soulless 300-year-old woman or even an elemental spirit type of category, where you can also say, look, if you're not down with any of that, and that's too far off the reservation for you, if it's real, it absolutely could be demonic powers.
Yeah, just a
manifestation. Engaged in deception.
So there is
that. Yeah, that for sure.
Real quick, before we continue with the show, you need to be aware that you're merely watching one episode of what's actually a 10-part series covering all things under the banner of high strangeness. The 10 episodes include the following. Number one, the lost city of Atlantis has just recently been discovered. Episode number two, Hollow Earth, the last living dragons, and primary water. Episode number three, biblical giants, their clans, sizes, and supernatural abilities. Episode number four, mythological giants. Hercules was actually a Nephilim. Episode number five, everyone has been wrong about Bigfoot. Episode number six, fairies, the elemental spirits. Episode number seven, the biblical case for the existence of mermaids. Episode number eight, ghost. That's not your grandma, that's a demon. Episode number nine, witches, necromancy, and familiar spirits. And lastly, episode 10, angels, their classifications, physicality, and sexes. Now, all 10 of these episodes are available ad-free right now, exclusively on Patreon. These episodes are only dropping one at a time over a series of multiple weeks, but you can get them all available today ad-free, plus the addition of two exclusive bonus episodes at patreon.com/rightresponseministries. Again, it's exclusively found at patreon.com/rightresponseministries. Right Response Ministries. Go and check them out today. And now back to our program.
There were a few things that I, so the one is, I actually don't think that the Watchers are the only ones that fell. We know that Lucifer also fell, and he was not a watcher. Right. He was probably a cherubim because of Ezekiel 28. Mm-hmm. But we don't know that for sure. And so I think that it's quite possible that within that whole time frame, you had multiple different ranks of angels falling. And I do like even when they fall, them remaining ordered,
yeah,
as a reflection of them remaining under God's sovereign decree, yeah, and over his power. And so they don't fall out of their role. They just fall into a twisting of their role.
Right.
And then Calvin talks about this in his commentary on Genesis at length, actually. He talks about how a fallen angel, like a messenger, would take on a twisted version of the same role. So they would visit you while you're on DMT trips, for example.
Right. And they would bring a message.
Right. A fallen principality becomes the prince of Persia, and they lead Persia further into their sin. A fallen elemental would become, for example, the god, the Egyptian god of the Nile.
Right.
Who in the first plague, God kills and fills the Nile with his blood.
Right.
And then, by the way.
Or Dagon.
Right. Or Dagon. As a, just real quick though, this is amazing. So the Egyptian sorcerers are able to do the serpent thing, which is dragon. They're able to turn water into blood. They're able to do the frogs. They're not able to do anything else after that. And it's because the goddess of frogs in Egypt was the goddess of fertility and sorcery. And so when God kills the goddess of sorcery and fertility in Egypt, the magicians can no longer
count. They're like, we're doing all the spells. It used to work.
That's just really fascinating to me.
That is fascinating.
See, to me, that's actually a melding of all of these.
But the point is, these are real gods. Yeah, and when we say God, we don't mean there's only one true capital G God, but lowercase G.
What we would conceive of as divine beings.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is just when people colloquially say demon. What you're saying is actually basically the same thing I'm saying.
There's different categories.
There's just different categories of fallen of spiritual being that fell, and within the realm that God gave them, they fell.
They operate.
And they're still there
within that realm,
but they're fallen now, and some of them
are still there, and then some of them have been locked in dungeons.
Yes,
particularly for the sin of procreating with the daughters of men and creating the Nephilim.
I think that the sin of the Watchers who fell and did that was so grievous that they are locked in gloomy dungeons. The Nephilim, the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim, I believe are the unclean spirits. Mm-hmm. But I also think that other angelic categories could have fallen.
Right.
Lucifer fell, been
locked away.
Right.
But they're still here.
Because they didn't commit the same sin.
Right.
And so in God's sovereignty, he delights to see them used against their will to achieve his ends.
God uses death to destroy death on the cross.
Exactly.
God uses the flood to save Noah and to kill. We've talked about this already, is that God loves to do that.
So he uses Persia to destroy Persia.
God, I can't emphasize this enough. God doesn't, you guys know what Deus Ex Machina type, where you have a plot and a story, and then all of a sudden, just by magic, everything's fixed. And you're looking at the story, and you're like, that's not that satisfying.
Right.
Because you can't really see how the resolution came about. It's much better, like Frodo and Sméagol and Sméagol Gollum and the ring, that Sméagol, through his slavery to the ring, Sauron's will to dominate, would end up dominating a character that led to the downfall of his own dominion.
And he swore by the precious and then broke the vow, and then in breaking the vow, he condemned the ring itself.
And you guys, forgive me. This is the cringiest thing I'll do this whole series. It's like in Harry Potter. J.K. Rowling just ripped this off of.
But is that more cringy than it's like the Avengers?
But it really is. I want to make this point because she.
I've made that
she
mistake.
She just ripped off the Christian gospel when she made Horcruxes, where the soul of the serpent,
soul shattering
enemy, you know, part of it's lodged in Harry. He becomes sin, is killed by the serpent, but then because he gave his life for his friends, rises and they are protected by his death for them in the resurrection. And the serpent ends up devouring itself. Even in the final battle where Harry Potter destroys Voldemort, he doesn't cast a killing spell. Mm. He casts a disarming spell, and Voldemort casts a killing spell that rebounds on himself.
Right.
So Rowling just stole all of this from You know, I'm not putting in the same league as Tolkien, just for the record.
Thank you.
At all. Not even
but
in the same
good.
Universe.
But it is good. I like Harry Potter.
But she stole that story. And not stole. This is how good storytellers work. It's not Deus Ex Machina. It's God uses means. So some people, I think, when they come to the story of redemption and how it works itself out in creation, we really want to simplify it down to a Deus Ex Machina thing. Where it's like all of a sudden everything's just, boom, fixed. But God really does like to use the serpent to kill the serpent, death right. to kill death.
God likes to use so there is such a thing as a Deus Ex Machina. There's a miracle. There is such a thing as a miracle, technically, where someone is miraculously healed. But that's from our perspective. God operates on a system that he developed, which is his sovereign decree from eternity past. And most of that sovereign decree is carried out in a system that he delights to use that we can also understand, which is things that are categorized and that operate within their categories and their spheres normally. And through that, what seems to us a very slow process, mm-hmm. but is actually very effective.
So speaking of systems, I like systems. I think for the most part in systems, I think this is what we have so far for the listener. One option is messenger angels. Angel just means messenger. So like think Gabriel, so for those messenger angels who fell, and that was their role, now it's they're still within their role giving messages, but now it's lying messages, twisted messages. So one conception of mermaids is it's all a lie promulgated by demons. And these messenger, fallen angels, messenger angels, and people have sightings of them, and especially if witchcraft is involved, aka pharmacy, drugs, then they might actually, these messenger angels may appear like to have a tail and jump out of the ocean or communicate with them. So that's one, is just to fascinate people, to distract people, to twist and pervert truth, take them away from Christ. That's one conception. Another is that there was actually a punishment for the women who engaged with the fallen angels, fallen watchers. And so it's not just their children cursed, the Nephilim, and not just the watchers cursed who did that and, going to gloomy dungeons, but the women became sirens. That's Enoch's version. The other one that you're saying is that each of these angels that fell, some of them being watchers, some of them being messenger angels, some of them maybe a cherubim like Lucifer, fell and had different regions and different roles and took on certain physical aspects of their region, their geographic region. And so those who were over water or oceans or these kinds of things became known as fish gods like Dagon within, Greek and Roman mythology, like Poseidon. And that they might have also, it's possible, taken daughters of men. And that maybe the Nephilim version of a fallen angel who was over a water arena and took on physical aspects, maybe that hybrid conception is a mermaid, whereas a hybrid, if it's, I know this sounds a little bit ridiculous, hear me out, but if it's a fallen angel that had a land role and went to a land principality region, and then human women who live on land, it's a Nephilim that's a land creature, but unhinged. Whereas if it's a, water type angel over a water region, still land women, but then it's half human, half fishtail.
I wouldn't
mermaid.
Say that.
But someone would.
Joel would. Someone who really loves systems.
I'm not saying that that's what happened, but I'm just saying that's another.
Yeah, it could be a way to conceptualize it. Basically, if I were to put my idea in a sentence, it would be that there is such a thing as an elemental spirit, and some of them may have fallen, thus creating evil rivers, evil forests, evil mountains. And therefore mermaids, old man willows, and the mountain, the third man of the mountain who kills you or something like that.
And the mermaids, but in that conception, what is a mermaid?
Yeah, okay. So I would say that in that conception, you can have a physical manifestation of the spirit that's over that area that lures you to your death for this, not even for deception. Because they hate the image of God.
Right.
And so they want to see it dead.
Right.
And so they do what they can to kill it.
But it's not real. It's a physical, it's an apparition.
Right.
It is real.
It's real, but it's not physical.
It's real. It is physical.
It can manifest as physical.
Because the angels that appear before Lot and they have physical form. They're able to eat and they interact.
They ate with Abraham.
You touch them. It is a real thing, but that doesn't follow from that is its permanent form. Right. It could also be that they have the capability of taking on temporarily this form.
They may be able to,
for the purposes God has given them,
to take on different forms like we do outfits.
Because they don't just, angels and spiritual beings aren't just given to perform purposes in earthly settings. They were also made to perform functions in heavenly settings, which we comprehend very little of, because we're not the imagers in heaven. Like, that's not our job. We have dominion over earth. That's what we're given to do. And in a sense, what we're saying ultimately is that man in Christ then is following after the Lord the same way that the armies of David followed after David, are to go out and wage war, spiritual battle, against the powers and principalities that are in principle defeated and being driven out entirely. So everywhere Christians go, there should no longer be a haunted mountain.
Let me give you an example of this
wicked
very
river
thing.
Anymore.
So St. Columba was an Irish monk who was a missionary to the Scottish people of his day, and I can't remember the date, but it was before St. Brendan. And the legend says that one day he was standing on the shores of Loch Ness, and he was trying to think of a way to get to the other side of the river that flows out of the loch, which is just another word for lake. And he's thinking, he's like, I don't know, it looks kind of dangerous. All of his buddies are behind him as other monks. And he sees down the way a little bit a collection of the people that he's actually trying to convert. And so he goes over to them and he sees that they're in the midst of burying one of their fellow men who had just died because he got into the lake and was attacked by the monster that lives in Lake Loch Ness. And so Columba says, okay, here's what we'll do. I'll revive this guy. He stretches his staff over the man's chest and he comes back to life and all is made well. But then he says, I'm going to go a step further. And I'm going to show you not only that the God of the Christians has sovereignty over life, but also over this monster that you're so afraid of dealing you death. And so he tells one of his monk fellows to swim across Loch Ness to get the little boat that's on the other side and to come back to him. And so this young man, without any hesitation, he takes off his cassock and he jumps in. And soon after he jumps in, people start to see the big ripples of the monster coming towards him.
They know what's coming.
And the monster lifts its mouth above the surface and starts to roar at the man. And right when he is about to clamp down his jaws on the man, St. Columba commands him to stop in the name of Christ. And the monster stops and he cowers away as if he's yanked back by ropes from a mighty ship. And he's yanked down to the bottom of the lake and he doesn't come back again. And the man swims across, gets the boat and swims back. And then all of the people converted. Because they saw the power that the Christian
it's
got.
It's Boniface, but instead of Thor's Oak,
that's like Boniface on monster. Another level.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to say monster. That could have happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like that's an end of episode story.
That's a mic drop.
Well, that's a mic drop. That's an end of episodes. That. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. All right, so if you want to find more info on some of the angel kind of stuff that we're talking about, Hollow Earth, and that gets into primary water and gets into, you know, all the mermaid type stuff, join us on Patreon, become a gold member. You can get all the bonus episodes, but also you can be a silver member. It's just $5 a month and you'll be able to get all of our main episodes before they're actually released to the public. They're actually all available right now. Go and check it out. And thanks so much for tuning in.
Real quick, right here at the end, I just wanted to remind you to become a member at patreon.com/rightresponseministries. Exclusively for our Patreon members, we have all 10 episodes, early access, ad-free. Some of my favorite episodes to be looking forward to is episodes that deal with Bigfoot or fairies or ghosts or angels or giants, or particularly our episode on witches. If you want to watch these episodes now, and you want to watch them without any ads, then you've got to join us by becoming a member at patreon.com/rightresponseministries.